Okay, everybody, this is part 19 with David Seeloff of The People That History Forgot. And David.
Hi, Georgianne.
Yeah.
Yeah, back again.
Yeah.
And this is the last chapter, and it's titled Islam and the People That History Forgot. Now, last time we brought the story up to the late Roman Empire, up to about the time of Constantine. And now we're going to discuss Islam about another several hundred years later. And these are the words of Dr. Ernest L. Martin. The Arabs believe that Mecca was founded by Adam and that its temple, the Kaaba, was built by Abraham. They ascribe the early prosperity of the city to Ishmael, who established his residence there. Because, as the Arabian traditions assert, the brackish well of Zemzem was the one to which the angel directed Hagar. Mecca must have been a very ancient city if, as the commentators believe, it was the Mesha, mentioned by Moses, as inhabited by Joktan's posterity. Medina, the sister city of Islam, called Yathrib, before the appearance of Muhammad, possesses more natural advantages than Mecca, but it is not situated so conveniently for traffic. The people of Medina seem always to have been jealous of the supremacy claimed by the Meccans. This was probably the reason why they espoused the cause of Muhammad when he began to preach his new message about the renewed faith of Abraham that he claimed to be a prophet to teach. Muhammad was very familiar with the teachings of the Jews and the Christians. There were quite a number of Jews, along with some exiled Samaritans, who lived in the Arabian Peninsula bordering the Red Sea. Muhammad came in contact with many of them. The book Islam by Alfred Guillaume states on page 11, quote, "There was a large Jewish colony in the Yemen in pre-Islam times, and they maintained an organized communal existence for centuries until they were brought to Palestine a few years ago. These Yemenite Jews certainly go back to the 4th century AD, and at one time the ruling king had become a Jew. Two Jewish descendants of these people exercised a profound influence on Muslim tradition. At the dawn of Islam, the Jews dominated the economic life, of the region. They held all the best land in the oases of Taima, Fadak, and Wadi al-Qura. At Medina, they must have formed at least half of the population," end quote. So it is important to realize that Muhammad was very familiar with Jewish and consequently Samaritan religious beliefs and practices. But this was not all. Muhammad himself was a member of the Hussein branch of the prestigious Quraysh priestly tribe that had long been in charge of the sacred area of Mecca. Just who were these people who made up the Quraysh tribe? The priestly Quraysh tribe of Mecca, to which all the Arabs of the peninsula gave honor and respect, has an interesting traditional history associated with it. Its ancient origination was from one of the most famous cities and regions of Mesopotamia. They were known to have come from Kutha. The Encyclopedia Britannica, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, 11th edition, volume 17, page 399b. Now, Kutha was a city located before the days of Alexander the Great, a few miles northeast of Babylon, in Iraq today. It was one of the earliest priest cities of the entire world. It was formerly the capital of the ancient kingdom of Sumer, which came into being right after the flood. It was built first by Cush, of the son of Ham, from whom it was named. And it was a city associated with power and influence with Babylon itself. And note this, it was the same central area from where the Samaritans, who lived in central Palestine, came from. That's right. Muhammad and the Samaritans had the same origin. It means that both of them were part of the people that history forgot. The fact that Muhammad had his origin from a priestly tribe that came from the famous Kutha in Mesopotamia is a most significant bit of information. At the time of Muhammad, the city of Kutha had long ago disappeared, and it came to an end just after the time of Alexander the Great. But for the Koryash tribe to remember their prestigious priestly origin for the centuries that followed shows that they held their Kutha ancestry in high esteem. The word Koryash means the same as Cyrus does in Hebrew, and they may have adopted the name in honor of the Persian king because he restored the priesthoods in Mesopotamia to their former prestige and let the peoples raise up temples and priesthoods in other areas of the Persian Empire, just like Cyrus allowed the Jews to rebuild their temple. The Koryash knew they came from the priestly center of Kutha, and they said Abraham was born there. This means that at some time in the past, probably a few centuries before Christ, when Kutha was still thriving as a city, some of the priests from that region of Mesopotamia moved into Western Arabia and joined forces with the people of Ishmael by marrying into their stock and becoming their priests. Now again, who were the Kuthians? This is a very common name among the Jews. With so many Jews in Arabia at the time of Muhammad, there would have been no doubt in identifying the origin of the Koryash priestly tribe to which Muhammad belonged. In Jewish parlance, a secondary name for the Babylonian people of Samaria that the Assyrians had brought into Palestine in the 7th century BC were the Kuthians, a secondary name for the people of Samaria, the Samaritans. Throughout the Talmud, written 200 or 300 years before Muhammad, the Jewish Talmud, the name Kuthians for Samaritans was a common one in regular use among the Jews. What this indication shows is that Muhammad was no doubt a descendant of the same type of people as the Samaritans, the original Kuthians from near Babylon. This means, though separated by 500 years, Muhammad was a Kuthian like Simon Magus. This fact is not often realized by people, but it is an important one to consider because Simon Magus and his successors can be shown to be the ones who corrupted early Christianity. And now the same stock of people were with Muhammad, beginning to raise up a new world religion from Arabia. This means that the origins of both types of Christianity that we have today, with pictures, images, icons, etc., was started by those who came from Kutha near Babylon. But we also find that Muhammad, who revolted against the use of idols, was still a person who came from the same general stock of people. This means that though the doctrines of the various Christian sects and the various sects of Islam, though they're very different from one another, still the impetus for their devising a one world religion came from the same stock of people. Thus, we have two world religions having their basic origins directly from the region of Babylon in Mesopotamia. The book of Daniel shows that all the political and religious factors that make up our world today had their origination with Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. This is clear in Daniel chapter 2. Jeremiah was told that a new age was beginning in his time and that he was to be an axial prophet. Jeremiah was to close one age in history and to open up a new one. In his first chapter, Jeremiah was told in Jeremiah chapter 1 and verse 10, "See, God is talking, I have this day set you over the nations and over the kingdoms to root out and to pull down and to destroy and to throw down and to build and to plant." So this new age was to commence with Nebuchadnezzar and the emergence of the Neo-Babylonian Empire. This is what the whole of the book of Daniel was designed to inform the world about. It was to be a Babylonian world from then on. No matter what region of the world one would live, Babylon was to be the head of gold. That is, the principles that govern Babylon would be those that would influence all future nations on earth until the kingdom of God would be set up on earth from the city of Jerusalem. And that is why in the book of Revelation we find all the various kingdoms of the world that the book discusses as being Babylonian in origin. And what do we have? In Christianity, we have been taken over by the philosophies and doctrines of the Babylonians as promulgated by the syncretism of Simon Magus and his successors. We have the images and icons of the pagans in most churches. And though they are clearly the remnants of the old pagan gods and goddesses, we call them by the names of Christ, the apostles, the prophets, and other men who were influential in early Christianity. And the Christian society, which represents about one-third of the population of the present world, is more prone to the use of the Babylonian idols than even the most ancient Babylonians themselves. And though with Islam, the very opposite is the case in its abhorrence of any form of idolatry or image-making, its philosophy of a one-world universal government coming from Mecca, Medina, and Jerusalem is the same concept that Nebuchadnezzar and his successors were advocating.
Yes.
And now that it can be known that Muhammad himself was a descendant of the prestigious Quraysh tribe that came originally from Kutha in Mesopotamia, it should not be difficult to see the handing down of the Babylonian philosophical principles and doctrines in their varietal forms in the guise of the Abrahamic faith. That Babylonian concept of a one-world government of mankind was being taught by Islam by its various sects, now has about a quarter of the world's population adhering to it. Indeed, the philosopher Carl Jaspers, in his work titled The Origin and Goal of History, made the observation that the epoch surrounding the time of the prophet Jeremiah was what he called the axial period for the history of mankind. His thesis was that near that time, the world went into a brand new type of philosophical and religious belief that caused the great world religions that we know of today to have their basic origins. He felt it was no accident that Buddha, Lao Tzu, Zoroaster, Shintoism, the Greek philosophers, the beginnings of Judaism, were all concentrated in origin within this axial period of history. And the center of it all, according to the Bible, was the Neo-Babylonian Empire and its first king, who was Nebuchadnezzar. It can be shown that much transplantation of Babylonian ideas and religious beliefs were introduced into India at this time, which altered Hinduism in some of its essential teachings. And from India, they spread into China and the eastern areas of Asia. When all is said and done, it can be shown that all the religions in the world that we see about us at the present have, in one way or another, been influenced by the people that came out of the region of Babylon. And in the case of the Samaritans and others like them, who gave Christianity its present form of idolatry, we can know that it was inspired by Simon Magus, himself a Samaritan. And as mentioned above, even Islam has its basic teachings coming from the priests of Kutha, who originated in Mesopotamia. It is no wonder that the Bible refers to the age from the time of Nebuchadnezzar to the second advent of Christ as being the age which will be dominated by Babylon and its philosophies. Just read the books of Daniel and Revelation. I believe that the information that I have provided in this book, that we can now know who were the people that history forgot. And they were not those of rabbinic Judaism who have been accused of practicing idolatry in the 400 years from the 2nd to the 6th centuries. Rabbinic Judaism has not been guilty of such idolatry in the main, nor are they today, in the sense of putting paintings, pictures, and icons of pagan gods and goddesses in their synagogues. The mainline Jews did not do such things, and they do not do them today. But who were the people that history forgot? The principal people were the Samaritans, who went into Europe and became Christians. They were also the Syrians and the Phoenicians, who did the same thing. In other words, they came in waves throughout history. Additionally, there were also the Edomites, who gave the rise to some of the emperors of Rome. And we should not forget the priestly tribe of Quraysh, who gave rise to Islam. And they were also other Semitic tribes who joined their brethren in the West. All of these people who went to Europe now go by different names, which are modern European ones. These peoples are certainly not inferior in any way that man imagines, which has to do with race or racial characteristics. Absolutely not. These people are sophisticated and intelligent people. They have so much to offer to the world. But the idolatry which they advocate has become rampant wherever they spread their form of Christianity. The scriptures warn people about the harmful effects of image-making and idolatry. Perhaps we should keep ourselves, we should close this historical study with about the people that history forgot with two quotes from John and Paul. 1 John 5:21, little children, keep yourselves from idols. And 1 Corinthians 10:14, as we read in the prior chapter, dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. So ends chapter 19, Islam and the People That History Forgot, and the book, The People That History Forgot. And there are no appendices in this book.
Oh, boy.
Like usual. So, thank you, Georgianne. It's been a great pleasure to go through this.
Oh, it's been a great pleasure to sit and listen and record this. David, I think that this particular series is going to become historic. It offers so much information, important information,
right,
for Christians, for Jews, for Muslims.
And what we discovered was, you know, Hyslop's Two Babylons book.
Yes.
What was Hyslop's first name? Do you happen to remember?
No, I just know Hyslop.
Yeah. And, you know, he just touched tip of the iceberg. Of course, he covered the nature of the idolatry and the symbolism and how it was identical to Babylonianism. But, you know, Dr. Martin went far greater range in history to, I think, really nail it down, which is not to diminish Hyslop's contribution at all.
Yeah.
Dr. Martin, refers to him. But, you know, I think this is very useful. And it's essentially also a history of Gnosticism,
yes,
as well as the idolatry in the Roman Catholic Church, which, as I said a couple of weeks ago when we did the chapter 17 and 16, you know, that the new pope was going to be elected. Well, when we're recording this on the 19th of March 2013, we have a new pope, Pope Francis.
Yes.
And all the regalia, all of those implements and the things they carry, the ring he wears, the vestments that he wears, and the hats from the beanie to the big crown, the fish-like crown, all of those are rooted in pagan symbolism.
Yes.
And
even
the transfer.
Yamata.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Although I don't know if that's what that is. I know it has a different name. But I don't think that comes from Judaism. Or do you have reason to believe that Yarmulke is pagan?
Anything on the head like that is pagan.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that the Jews cover their heads, and they're supposed to come bareheaded to...
Yes.
Well, I don't know about the priests. The priests aren't... The priests have to wear certain vestments. But why don't they copy the vestments of the Jewish priests? But they don't.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'd be wearing, you know, big high turbans that look like mushrooms and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they don't. So it'll be interesting to see how much of this is used and thrown out if a temple ever gets built.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these influences are going to push at the Jews, and they're going to have to stand fast to, you know, because if a temple is ever built, and I believe it will be, everybody's going to want to get on that train, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to want a part of it, and there'll be, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this works out. And with the disruptions in all the major nations surrounding Jerusalem, surrounding Israel, it'll be interesting to see. We have a division now of the 10 nations appear to be forming up, as talked about in Psalm 83, which might be the 10 toes at the end of the age. So we shall, things are starting to move in prophecy.
Could they be what's called the BRICSA nations?
No. The BRICS are Brazil.
Yeah.
Brazil, India,
China,
and
Africa.
I forget what the S is, but or the BRIC nations. Yeah, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Yeah, these are the BRIC nations are not part of the 10 nations, in my understanding and Dr. Martin's understanding. Those are major nations, but even Russia is not doing too well, and China might crack in pieces. India looks like it might hold together, and Brazil will be a rising power along with India.
Yes.
If China cracks and splits into an interior and a coastal area, or north and south, there are divisions north-south in China. If they have an economic downturn, they could very well split into two or four parts. Now, there would be a lot of warfare and death involved in that, because those who hold power are quite ruthless, as we saw at Tiananmen Square decades ago.
Yes.
You know, it's there has to be a beginning for inroads of the gospel into China and all areas of the world. That's another thing that has to be set up with prophecy, is all areas of the world have to be receptive to the true teaching of the gospel, not the, you know, the stylized, the pagan Christianity.
Yeah, the evangelical
hoopdala.
Right. Yeah.
With all the problems inherent with that.
Yes.
So, we live in interesting times, and I believe they will get more interesting and more exciting.
Oh, you can count on it. David, one thing about prophecy, since prophecies are known, they become very easy to fulfill. And that's kind of disturbing.
Yes, on a whole. But one thing is not easy to fulfill. Anyone who claims he's the Messiah and has returned, and the Mount of Olives does not split in two, you don't have to worry. He's a liar and a false Messiah.
Yeah.
And that even includes the Antichrist. Now, there might be some rumblings. I mean, when fire comes down from heaven, that will cause rumblings, as we know. It's interesting now that we are beginning to have an intensification of signs in the skies,
mm-hmm.
Of all kinds. You know, not just lights in the skies, but meteors coming down. You saw the images of the Russian meteor that hit. That thing, you know, if I'd have been there on the ground, that would have looked awfully supernatural to me.
Yeah, it sure would.
And I remember one time when I saw... Oh, I hope I didn't talk about this before. When we were high up in Southern California, in Los Angeles, my wife and I were driving, and down below in the valley, a transformer blew.
Yeah.
It lit up the entire valley. It was remarkable. It looked supernatural, but then I figured out what it was, and sure enough, it was confirmed by the news.
Yeah.
Because the lights went out soon after that this thing blew up. And it was amazing, though, how bright it was.
Oh.
So, you know, there are things, you know, and of course we see cloud formations. There was a cloud formation, appeared to be like an angel at the time of the new Pope's inaugural election.
Yes.
And one of the glories of human beings is their ability to assign... what's the term I like to use? Pattern recognition. That's one of the glories of human beings.
Yeah.
Is we can recognize patterns, and sometimes we recognize them so well, we insert patterns into something that is a natural phenomenon.
Yes.
And, you know, that can get us into trouble sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning-wise. You know, and we do that with prophecies. We see patterns and the whole Bible code foolishness. You know, well, it goes this way and that way, diagonally and everything, every third letter on the diagonal. Well, who's to say that you should have, how many letters wide should the system be?
Yeah.
Should it be 22 or 24? You can have different counts of Hebrew letters if you take different forms of the letters, Hebrew letters for S,
uh-huh.
Whether those are distinct or not. So all of this stuff is based on pattern recognition, and some of it is quite striking. But it never proves anything. It never predicts anything. I've never seen anyone predict anything from any of the Bible codes. And even if they did, that wouldn't prove anything.
Hmm.
You know? They could claim, you know, they'd have to publish it first and then claim.
Yeah.
That's not the proper use of the Bible or the prophecies.
Right.
That's a form of shamanism.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, ancient religions. So, okay.
Well, David, this has been very enlightening, very interesting. And
it's been my pleasure.
Well, I hope people will pay attention, and you and I are going to do more books.
Yes.
I'm very excited about some of the things that we're talking about doing. So everybody, stay tuned, pay attention, and God bless you for listening. You can contact David Seeloff at this email address. It is david@askelm.com, and that's askelm.com. Their website is askelm.com. And also, go to the Byte Show, go to the audio library, click on David Seeloff's name, and his page will open up with oodles and oodles of audio files that David and I've done over the years. So God bless everybody out there that's listening. Good night.